Dude, I'm going to apologize now, but I am gassy.
Oh,
I've farted four times since we've been in here. None of you would notice. So.
Yeah, but I'd rather you not tell us.
Yeah.
All right.
No. But at least now we have the start to the podcast.
Hello and welcome back to League Pass and Chill. This is Fox Sports Australia's basketball podcast. It's been a while. I'm Gadi Notelovitz. I'm hosting today. Ogun Ulic is not in. I am joined by Harrison Pullinger.
That's your cue, man.
It's been a while. Ted Smith.
Hello, I am Ted Smith.
And Thomas Handley.
Greetings.
Yes, we have not been around for a long time. But to be honest, not a heap of stuff has been going on. So, that's just unprofessional, isn't it, Tom?
It is.
Yeah, not a lot has been happening. So we thought we'd take a little bit of an off-season break before getting into it. We will be back every week, we promise, throughout the season. There's obviously been a bit going on. Regular off-season, preseason stuff, workout videos. The Basketball World Cup was on. Daryl Morey started a war with China, and today there was the latest development in that with LeBron James speaking out,
Starting a war with Daryl.
Let's play the clip.
We all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself. So I don't believe, I don't want to get into a word or sentence feud with Daryl Morey, but I believe he wasn't educated on the situation at hand, and he spoke, and so many people could have been harmed, not only financially but physically, emotionally, spiritually. So just be careful what we tweet and we say and what we do. Even though yes, we do have freedom of speech, but there can be a lot of negative that comes with that too.
So Harrison put that video on our website, foxsports.com.au, earlier today.
Good plug.
And I actually found it interesting that Harrison was kind of on Team China.
Okay, all right, hang on.
Well, being on Team LeBron
is such
like
a wild sentence.
Because what I take from that clip is LeBron is team neutral. He wants to protect his brand, which is totally understandable. This guy is literally a company.
It is understandable. I totally get it. We're talking about tens of millions, possibly hundreds of millions for LeBron over the course of his career and life post-basketball. But the problem I have with it, and I support what he's been doing the last 3 years in reaction to Trump, in reaction to Black Lives Matter. Like he's been a social justice warrior and one of the most important figures on that scene in America and the world. And I love that about him. I'm always going to say Michael Jordan's a better player than LeBron, but LeBron's actions over the last half a decade have softened me towards LeBron until today, because I feel his, by him saying, Morey doesn't have enough knowledge, the quote in there, more people could have been harmed. People are being harmed, bro. Like yourself.
Let me just jump in. Yeah, LeBron did add for context or to clear up the confusion that when he said that Morey wasn't informed or that he wasn't educated, he was referring to the potential consequences of that tweet rather than he wasn't informed on the situation between Hong Kong and China.
Yeah,
just to clear that
he wasn't
we know what he was talking about.
He didn't
about.
Realize how much money he could potentially cost LeBron and his ilk.
He was in China when that tweet was sent. When he says what people could have been harmed, okay, yes, he's not talking about the Chinese people. He's talking about the Lakers team that are walking in and out of a stadium with protesters outside.
Yeah.
You're telling me that someone throws a bottle that's not going to be a problem for the league?
Yeah, yeah, but it's
and
a problem.
And that's not going to be a problem for LeBron?
It's a problem that every fan of democracy in Hong Kong is facing daily, right? There already are dramas.
And when you talk about LeBron's work as a social justice warrior, you're talking about Black Lives Matter, something he understands quite well. You're talking about Trump's leadership, something he understands quite well. It's happening in his country. He's seeing the effects of it. He is saying, he's not saying that what China's doing is right. He is saying that he does not know enough of what's happening to make a claim.
My problem is if it didn't cost him money, he wouldn't be saying shit. The fact that it's costing him money is the reason that he's taken this stance, and that's what I have an issue with.
Him coming out and saying what he's saying in the States might be costing him money as well. You're talking about a fan base through the whole of Middle America, that which he might be losing because of the things that he's saying, and yet he still says it because that's what he believes. He's saying in this situation, he's not saying anything, but I don't know enough to comment, so I'm not going to take a side. I'm just saying maybe Daryl Morey should have been more
457th educated. 457th time Harrison and I have had to agree to disagree.
I think we can all agree that maybe the way he went about his answer today wasn't the best. I mean, I think if he had kind of no answered it or said what everyone else was saying, which was, I don't know enough about it, and just left it at that, there wouldn't be so much outrage. Him having a go at Daryl Morey, though, is kind of where people were like, what's going on here? He did, as I said on Twitter, clear it up. So he said, my team in this league just went through a difficult week. I think people need to understand what a tweet or statement can do to others. And I believe nobody stopped and considered what would happen, could have waited a week to send it.
I'll give you that one.
Yes, yeah, it was while the teams were in China.
Yeah.
Still, and had to shut down media availability and stuff like that.
I'm Team Morey.
Mate, I am as well. I think what he said, he had every right to say it. But I just don't think that LeBron saying what he said. And as you said, Gardy, he's clearly uncomfortable in that question. You listen to him stutter over some of his words. He did not want to be asked that question. And, okay, he chose the wrong route, but I don't think he said anything too problematic to the point where, Ted, you might be saying that he's wishing harm on people.
No. I'm not saying. good Ted comeback. That's old Ted style. That's good. But all I'm saying is, again, it's tarnished the good work he's done in the past, because it creates the possibility that maybe he'd give less of a shit about those things if it hurt his bottom dollar.
It is an intriguing scenario, though, that one tweet by one person who is associated with the NBA has resulted in businesses pulling or suspending their relationship with the NBA, preseason stuff going down.
It's huge.
It's a market that's worth billions and billions and billions of dollars that could all be ruined by one tweet.
There are more basketball fans in China than there are the population of Americans in America.
Yeah, I believe it's like 500 million, the market for NBA fans. And just if you were like living in a cave or a hole or something, this all started with Daryl Morey tweeted just a photo along the lines of like support for Hong Kong or something. Yeah. It wasn't even like super inflammatory. It was just like, I support Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And things went.
One more question. Do we know what time of the night in the USA that tweet was?
The Morey one?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because if it was at night, it was probably after a few reds.
Yeah.
You know, just kicking back. He's like, yeah. Hey, go Hong Kong. Boom.
What's the alcohol that makes you most like empathetic towards things?
Cappuccinos. We'll beat that.
I was at 7:41 on the 4th of October. Yeah, PM. Sorry.
Yeah, and he's a millionaire. PM. That's red time.
Yeah, with red time. What day was the 4th of October? Could have been a Sunday afternoon.
He would have been
well deep by that point.
He's a millionaire.
Can't wait for the yarn to go up, like behind Daryl Morey's tweet. A red.
Is he an alcoholic?
A bottle of red wine.
He'd love that diversion.
Friday afternoon. There you go.
Oh, winding down.
Yeah, dude.
A little wine and pizza.
This is not looking good for Daryl.
But yeah, I mean, we weren't planning to speak too much about that whole China situation, but obviously LeBron speaking today changed that because he is the biggest superstar in the league that we cover, so it was worth mentioning. We do, though, want to start previewing the NBA season because it is, how many days away is it now?
Like eight.
Eight days away, yeah. So there will be two preview pods, including this one, coming out before the season starts. In this one, we kind of wanted to take a look at like the teams that have caught our eye throughout the preseason or the offseason that we think are going to make a splash or might go down and crash in a simmering fire of hell.
Don't stare at me when you say that.
Christ.
Oh my God.
So yeah, we've all kind of come up with three teams each, and then we'll discuss maybe like some of the big contenders that we didn't mention after that. Harrison, I want to start with you first.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a team that you're interested in.
He's been waiting for this all summer.
And why?
Okay. I will start by saying this. Any team in the offseason, if you wave Dwight Howard, you are going to catch my eye. And the Memphis Grizzlies did just that. Memphis made so many great moves this offseason. So apart from letting DeLon Wright go, I didn't like that because they signed Tyus Jones for almost the same money when I think Wright is probably the better player and he's slightly larger as well. But drafting Ja Morant with two, which most people seem to think is a home run at that position, picking up Brandon Clark, the Summer League MVP, and just what he's already brought to the table. Today against, who are they playing, the Hornets, Clark finished with 16 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, a block, 60% from the field in less than 20 minutes.
Oh, boy.
So is that you, good? Mm.
That's goddamn insane.
Wow. I think that's good.
Yeah.
What they have now, they have a direction, which like Atlanta did last offseason, where they invested in that direction. They have got Jaren Jackson playing outside in, shooting threes. He shot 5 of them today, shot 5 of them, made 2, I think. You got Brandon Clark playing from the inside out, both of which are able to switch onto any player on the court at any time. And then you have Ja Morant, who I think has the potential to be a really, really special point guard in the league. Today, he took an inbound pass, 2 dribbles up the court, up and under on the other side of the hoop. He's a beautiful player to watch. Got to the free throw line, I think, 9 times today.
Oh, they're great. That's what we need more of in 2019.
Yeah,
getting the free throw more often.
What an exciting narrative. Of course you would. Follow. What are the Memphis Grizzlies? Like, what will be seen as success for them this season?
Oh, not being the worst team in the West.
Sure.
Probably. I think if they're better than Phoenix.
That's right. We don't count Phoenix. That's right.
If they're better than Phoenix, then I think you can tick them off as a successful season. But like the reason I love them so much is because they have a direction that they're going in. And that ticked everything that I like about Memphis.
I was saying the same thing about the Hawks last year that I just liked what they were trying to do. Can we just naturally segue into mine, which is the Hawks?
Yeah.
We're here. We're in it.
Yes, we are.
It's happening. What I like is how young they are. I've got their starters down as Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, DeAndre Hunter, the rookie, who has not played a game but has managed to beat 3 clubs already. That's impressive. John Collins and Alex Len, the veteran, who's only entering his seventh year in the NBA. And like some of us said last year, I wasn't upset with the Donk trade, even though I know the Donk is a better player than Trae Young.
That's Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
Even I struggled to pick up that one.
Yeah, yeah. Fair. Sorry.
Translator.
I just feel like I'm talking to you guys. So I know Doncic is a better player, but Trae Young fit what the Hawks were trying to do, and that is to mimic the success that Golden State have had by having 2 elite 3-point shooters and everyone being able to shoot the 3. And that's what they've got this year, even though it is a young team. DeAndre Hunter, who is coming off an NCAA championship at Virginia, shot 44% from 3 last year. Obviously, that'll dip. Trae Young, despite finishing the season hot, still only had a season average of 32% from the field last year, but Huerter's 38%. Even Collins, who I didn't picture as a shooter, is 35%, and Alex Len, 36%. They can shoot the ball.
And they go Cam Reddish, which will be interesting.
Yeah, I was about to say, making a call on that lineup, I reckon Len falls out of that lineup, Collins moves to 5, and they play Cam at the 4 and go 4 out, Collins in, and that'd be perfect for that system.
I'd be happy with that. And when it comes to to actual playing your basketball, I'll tip my hat to you every time, HP. The coach. I like what they're doing. And I've actually got the Hawks finishing in the playoffs this year, which I think would be huge. The top 6 or 7, clear cut, they are going to be in it. The Hawks, they only have to beat Harrison's Magic, I think. That's who it'll be out of to get through in the East. You have a look at, I guess, Detroit will be there as well. But they should beat Chicago, Knicks and the Wizards, so it could be a big year for the Hawks.
You know what I don't understand about the Hawks offseason, though, is they picked up Jabari Parker, Chandler Parsons, Alan Crabb and Evan Turner. Generally, if you're taking on those stinky contracts for stinky players, you're getting a whole lot of picks back. I don't think they got that much back for any of them.
Parker's a weird one. Someone that enjoys going on the record to state that he does not like or want to play defense. I don't know why you'd bring him in, especially when you consider he's not producing the offensive productivity that he did in his first 2 years of the league as well. So, sure, they've got their problems. They are the Atlanta Hawks. They haven't been good since Bud left, but...
But trust in Schlenk, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All behind Schlenk.
Schlenk. Unfortunately, for those that became tired of that narrative last year, I still like the Hawks. And I'm going to light the
whole thing. I think they're going to be so much fun to watch. They're going to run the floor a lot, shoot a lot.
Look, what's Trae Young's 3-point percentage to go up a long way this year?
Well, yeah, well, I just looked it up. He had like a historically bad start to the season.
Yeah, I just looked it up. Then what was his 3-point stats again? Sorry, what was his percentage on the year?
At the end of the year, 32%.
Yeah, so from the second half of the year, so the last 41 games, he shot 35.
Yeah, so if he can do that for the season.
Yeah, and that's like it probably even got better as the season went on. Like the last 20 games were probably twice as good as that.
Yeah.
Now, a team we just discussed that Ted thought would potentially fall into the river before they got good is actually on Tom's list of teams you'd like to speak
Sacramento
about.
Kings.
Talk to me through the Sacramento Kings.
It's. I want to throw something at you guys.
Go on, dude.
Sit with it. I believe, in my humble opinion, that the Sacramento Kings have four of the most interesting players. They have four of the most interesting players, interesting young talents, in the NBA today.
Name them.
In Marvin Bagley, De'Aaron Fox, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and Buddy Hield.
Are you talking about 30?
Yeah, Buddy Hield's sneaky old. He's not 30, but he is sneaky old.
And Bagley.
So is Bogdan, actually. He's like 27.
Well, you're ruining your own list.
Yeah. No, I'm saying young talents. They've only been in the league for so long, so they're still young talents. New talent. That's a better way to put it. Okay. Yeah.
Are you talking about the 6'8" Marvin Bagley? Who was downgraded?
Yeah, who's not quite
downgraded by from 6'11" to 6'8".
That hurts. Really,
my guy's been
it?
Living a lie. Mm. If he was saying he was 6'11", I might be able to go and be like, I'm 6'1".
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
I'm going to claim even
whoever's auditing these heights would have a field day on Tinder.
Yeah. I was wondering if they did that for his trade stock to try and boost him up a little bit. They're like, oh, he's 6'11".
Yeah.
And then now he's an established player. They're like, sorry, 6'8".
Before you go on with the Kings, there's a couple other height ones that made me laugh. Draymond is now officially 6'5".
Oh my god!
He's been playing at it.
You're almost taller than him,
at
Harrison.
At the five,
oh my god!
He's been playing at the five as a 6'5" human.
Oh my god!
Isaiah Thomas, 5'8".
What about Ben Simmons?
I don't know if he got downgraded.
I'm assuming he went up.
He went up for sure.
Yeah, I think he's posted at 7 feet.
KD went up.
Yeah. Why is this only happening now?
Dwight 6'9".
Is this based on last season or like?
Because originally they said you didn't need an official measurement at the start of the year, so they just went off whatever the draft grade,
the combine was.
They just wrote their own. They were writing their own tickets. Yeah. Before we continue on about people's heights, do we think the Kings can surprise teams again this year and push for a playoff spot?
Yeah, I would say they're closer to a 50-win team.
I disagree strongly because if you look at them last year, they were in a playoff position. They were killing it. And then was it Shrumpet they traded?
No, mate, they brought in Harrison.
Yeah, but they lost Shrumpet, who was being effective, and swapped him in for Harrison.
I don't know why they did that. He was in the most effective lineup of their team. He was the veteran that kind of led these young guys.
So I think the team that we saw at the back end of the year kept on falling short in big games could be the one we see again this
Not
year.
Not only did they bring in Harrison Barnes, but they extended him out and paid him more
for
money.
Heaps of money.
Can someone please explain to me what everyone sees in Harrison Barnes?
I've got it. He must be a really good guy.
He's getting picked in Team USA teams as well.
I know,
I'm pretty sure he was in before everything started, though.
No, he was. When he came in from North Carolina, he was very, very progressive in his recovery. He was doing yoga, proper rehab, pretty much as an 18-year-old. And I think they brought him in being like, he's so mature that when you give him Team USA training, he's already on the Warriors system.
Yeah.
He's going to blossom into
an
NBA
superstar. And then he missed that shot.
Now, shot. Yeah. I think you mean like open shots.
So what? He's good at staying loose to like miss the corner.
I'm saying that's why my struggles with this franchise.
Like I'm in the process of picking a new favorite team, and the Kings are on the short list.
Oh my god, is it that time of the year again?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, this is the continuing the conversation from last year. So they have four of my favorite players in the NBA, but they just have this ownership that you just can't trust whatsoever. The biggest question about them in the end of things is their depth. And their defense. They're going to be exciting to watch, but maybe I'll take that back to the fact that I said they're a 50-win team because they're probably not, but they could be a fringe playoff team. It'd be interesting to see how they go under Luke Walton's new system how it works for them.
What could prove Harrison and I wrong when we say we don't think they'll make it is it could be as simple as their guns, their core group of players, Fox and whatnot, just improve them by 3 or 4%, and they're at that age bracket.
That's what I put it down to. Like Buddy and De'Aaron took the leap last year. Buddy became one of the best 3-point shooters in the league, and De'Aaron
Which
Fox is,
crazy
is not
when
far
you
off.
See, remember where he was in his first.
Yeah, season. Exactly. De'Aaron's not far off being top 10 point guard in the league, but Marvin Bagley and Bogdan Bogdanovic, I expect to have career years easily. Well, Marvin's not going to be hard because he only had 1 year. Put it down the fact that I reckon Bogdan's a chance for the sixth man of the year.
Nice.
And Marvin Bagley will, it's not even a hot take, he's going to average a double-double. He'll be your 20-10 guy.
There's who might win sixth man of the year this year?
Who? Lou?
Nah. Guess who's got moved to sixth man?
Who?
Joe Jingles.
Oh, Ingles really?
Is apparently going to move.
For who? And who's it going in the starting lineup?
That's cool. Probably Jeff Green.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
That's good.
It'd be...
And Jeff Green in there. And
he'll be playing like he does for Australia, I reckon. Like a hybrid point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, who's their backup point guard?
Yeah.
That's Dante?
Exum.
Yeah.
So I'll give a team that I
slip in there.
That interests me.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go so positive because you guys have all gone positive. So this is a team where I think everything's going to go wrong. / kind of hope. I know it sounds bad, but like I just don't like this move. The Houston Rockets.
I was going to say, I can sense some Houston Rockets hate coming in.
Yeah, you can just feel it in the air.
Like
yeah.
James Harden, Russell Westbrook. Like, give me the overs and unders on like how long until this all comes crumbling.
20
down.
Games.
20 games?
Oh, wow.
It's happening quick.
They'll get a season out of them. I'll say.
You reckon?
Yeah, I reckon next
year. Where they're happy with each other, though.
Yeah, because if they...
Like first or second round loss, and then it all starts crumbling from there.
If they win at the start of the year, they'll be...
Yeah.
I reckon game 65, they're going to have a mad sideline blow up.
There'll be
some tweets happening back and forth, and then everything's okay, and then they're going to roll through the playoffs, and then they're going to get knocked out and in the playoffs early, and it's all going to collapse.
I just think everything started so buddy-buddy. They're in each other's pockets throughout off-season, pre-season. They're, like, making a thing of it, you know? Like, and it's the same thing that happened when Chris Paul came and James Harden was like, ooh, it's a new toy. Like, we're superstars that are going to work together. And it was like, but how does that work together? And it didn't really. Like, yes, the Rockets played...
Yeah, they won a lot of games.
They won a lot of games, but like it wasn't enough, and it still doesn't feel like enough to me. And this is even worse because I feel like as much as Chris Paul obviously has a big ego, thinks he's one of the best players in the league, he's not a superstar in his prime. Russell Westbrook is a superstar in his prime alongside another superstar in his prime. I don't see how they're happy just giving up the ball. I don't know how that's
going to work.
They're
two of the most ball-dominant guys in the league.
It's going to work until it doesn't work in a game, and then it's going to be an issue because one will want the ball.
Personally, I think the biggest issue is that Russ has to change his game a bit. The problem with that is that we've been saying that since he came into the league. Like if he can make cuts off the ball and be a willing support player with Harden, he'll be great. But he hates moving off the ball.
At no point has he played with another superstar that was anything but an ISO offensive player. Kevin Durant was not creating off the dribble. Paul George certainly isn't a create off the dribble kind of guy. So who's he slashing for?
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Really have the opportunity.
I assume over a 10-year career that he's played with some people that could pass the ball. It's just because Russ has just imposed his will on that team, on that court, and at training. They know it's Russ's gym, dude.
But even the other guards that have been in Oklahoma during his stay, you've had Eric Bledsoe, Reggie Jackson, Dennis Schroeder. None of them are creators.
No, but it's too easy to say that the only reason he doesn't move off the ball or play as like a helpful part of an offense if it's not in his hands is because he hasn't had an elite playmaker.
No, like, I'm
he's
saying...
had the opportunity to be a support guy to first Durant, then Paul George, and it's still just too difficult for him. Come the end of the game, he's going to take a shit mid-range jumper. It's going to brick. They're going to lose a game. James Harden is going to get angry.
Look, I agree with everything you're saying. I'm just saying that there are...
You're willing to watch him to see how he goes.
Absolutely, yeah. Because like you look at how dominant he is and how fast he is and how quick his movements are off the ball. If he can figure that out, the assists are going to be there for James Harden.
They're going to crowd him easily. Yeah, it's going to move the ball. The offense is going to be so spread. But I think the way it's, like you said, it's going to crumble around game 60 because they're going to do this for a while and they're going to have a lot of fun. But in the time of like desperation, you always crumble back to what's comfortable, what's natural for you. And that's exactly what's natural for him. It's what he's been doing his entire life. So when it really comes down to the nitty gritty, like it's just where your mind goes, you know?
Everyone's got a game plan so they get punched in the face, quote Michael Tyson.
I've got a question table though. What is more likely?
What?
Houston figuring out this backcourt and having a 2-0 lead in the Western Conference Finals Atlanta scraping into the playoffs in the last game of the season as a seventh seed.
Oh. The seventh seed, ooh.
Andrew Wiggins getting back to 2016 form and averaging 24 points per game.
You know there's no faith in that on this podcast. So is that a two options?
From
yeah.
the field.
It's a 50%.
Okay.
One of them's already happened, though.
Which one?
Andrew Wiggins has averaged 24 with 45% from the field.
During the preseason?
No, that's happened. Oh, okay. In 2016, yeah, okay. That happened.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, he's...
That was a while ago.
He's had a dive since
yeah,
then.
He's also been abused yeah, by another team.
I'll go the Hawks.
That's Hawks?
One more.
Yeah, I think I'm going to sit with the Hawks as well. I heard that could definitely
happen. It would be insane if I went with the Rockets after what I just said. So you know what? I'm gonna put a bit of faith in old Andrew Wiggins. I don't think he's going to do anything offensively, and that's the reason he'll never be an elite player. But hey, he can score the basketball.
Andrew
sometimes.
Wiggins, top 30 highest paid players in the NBA.
Yeah, they gave him a max contract because he had potential.
Before we move on, I'd like to say why I dislike Houston.
Oh, yeah?
And why I'm not keen to watch them this year.
Is it because they don't like China?
Right. Potentially. No, Murray hates China. Mm. Lillard had the second most amount of free throws last year. Let's guess.
Mm.
Ballpark, HP.
Wait, how many you got a game?
Yeah. No, total.
All season. Up.
Oh, my God.
I wouldn't even know how to.
It's like 350?
513.
Oh, not even close.
Second,
I like
right?
how you don't give me that. Like, yeah, no.
You pointed at him as though he was close.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That's so good. Felt so good for a second there.
Get a T for trying.
Yes, that's for Tom too.
So 513. That was second, and like second, third, fourth, fifth, all the way down is super close. The biggest gap is first to second.
Oh, can I guess?
Yeah.
900.
815.
858 free throws.
Oh.
Over 300 more than next best. What pisses me off about Houston is that one Russell Westbrook, fifth.
Mm.
451 of his own. There's going to be a lot of free throws.
That's 1,300 free throws.
Okay, I hate the fact that I'm doing this, but I'm going to defend Houston again. When Chris Paul was injured and Houston were running maybe six deep, you need to slow the ball down. And James Harden playing ISO and getting to the free throw line is essentially a timeout for his team. And when you don't have any substitutes, I'm not saying this is the reason he was playing hero ball and going to the free throw line all the time, but when you're in a situation where you only have six or seven players playing each night, maybe one or two of them are injured, you're in the middle of the season, getting to the free throw line is so important.
That's a very good point.
As we've said before, Harrison doesn't like fun.
Come on, man. Every time.
No, it's all analytical. It's all very process driven, but it's not a whole lot of fun there, Harrison.
You're right. We all picked three teams each out of every NBA team in the world, and Harrison picked two of the bottom five teams.
Yeah, talking about
according to Vegas.
Talking about a team where Russ came from, the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Nah, why? You are really good at this. Oh,
why? Olgan shaking in his boots.
Why on earth is that on your list?
Okay. He loves draft picks, baby.
I have background in journalism coming out there.
SGA is a stud.
Okay, mm-hmm. Sure.
I think if he wasn't in the Western Conference, which are just loaded in backcourt players, he would be an all-star. He would be an all-star in the East this year. That's how good I think he's going to be this year. Plus, they're going to roll out 3-point guards for the start of the season. So he's going to be playing so much. I just have so much trust in this guy from when I watched him play the Golden State Warriors. And as an 18-year-old kid who came into the league with no jump shot, he was shooting threes. And then when he got switched onto Steph Curry, he would take him into the post. What 18-year-old kid has the balls to be like, yeah, you know what, two-time MVP, I'm going to take you into the post and back myself.
Is it the game he had like 26?
Yeah. I'd absolutely love his game. So I'm really, really excited about him. So that's option one.
Mm-hmm.
My second option is I don't think Chris Paul is going to be on this team at the end of the year.
I agree.
Chris Paul agrees.
Yeah,
he agrees
with that.
And I would love to see a trade. All the talk is around him going to Miami. I would love to see a trade where they send maybe one of the Miami picks back and pick up Justice Winslow and Bam Adebayo. And then
that's a lot for Chris Paul.
But Miami are in a stage where, and we were going to talk about this when whoever's got Miami, Ted has Miami, is they actually don't have any of their picks left for the near distant future. So they actually can't grow organically. So they need to bring in veterans to stay relevant. And seeming Pat Riley said he's not going to retire until he gives Miami a good team again. If he doesn't want to be working until he's 95, he has to make a play for a veteran now.
So he's just going to send Winslow, Adebayo, get Paul, and then retire.
No, no, no.
I'm out, baby.
He's going to get Chris Paul.
For the next 3 months.
He's going to get Chris Paul. He's going to get one of their picks. He's going to have
Jimmy
Butler. And I don't know. I don't know what their salary cap looks like. If you can make it work with some of the younger players, maybe you take Steven Adams as well to fill that Bam Adebayo role. Sure. And then Oklahoma's rolling Justice Winslow, Danilo Gallinari, SGA, Bam Adebayo. Awesome.
That's a lot of fun.
The third reason I am interested in this team is they traded the rights to my favorite player in the draft, Brandon Clark, for a guy called Darius Bazley. Darius Bazley is a 6'8" power forward, 7'1" wingspan who did not go to college because he wanted to prepare for the NBA.
Sounds like a mechanic.
He just took the year off and he just trained, essentially.
Such a power move.
Yes. Coming out of high school, he was the 9th best player according to ESPN. So he's an elite talent, which no one drafted because they were like, oh, we didn't see him, doesn't matter. But the last time he played, he dominated the Nike Hoop Summit. The unknown behind this guy, just that excited me enough to be like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to chuck these guys on League Pass every now and again. Fourth is I'm just so intrigued of where the scoring is going to come from, because right now they're going to be hoping that Gallinari can be their number one scorer.
Yeesh.
Mm-hmm. Which the dude can't stay healthy.
I was going to say he has to stay up, right?
Yeah, and I'm just really intrigued because you look at the rest of this team. You got Roberson, Hamidou Diallo, Nerlens Noel, Mike Muscala, and Dennis Schroeder.
See, yeah, it's interesting that you use the word intrigued when you say you're intrigued to see where the scoring comes from.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how bored I'll be.
Exactly. It's like if you're intrigued to see, if you can't figure out how a team's going to score the basketball, it's probably going to be intriguing.
I don't know, man. The
wow,
the
they only managed
was,
69 points today.
The question was,
wow,
what teams, you know, yeah, move no, our needle? Mate, they move my needle.
That's the thing about taste, right? We've all got our own. You've just ruined Miami for me because you've just moved half my squad to Oklahoma.
Yeah, Ted, you've got that on your list.
Bam, gone. Who else left?
You got Chris Paul, though.
You got Tyler Hero.
Yeah, We do have Tyler Hero.
The greatest preseason player.
We've also got Dragic, who is going into his 12th year. Can you believe that?
That is wild.
I thought that. My notes on Miami, sneaky good three-point shooting team. Three-point shooting team outside of Big Bam, who can't shoot at all. Olenek, you can't trust him, but Butler only makes good shots. Dragic, who played F4 last year, is back. And as Guardy pointed out, they've got a new shooting guard in Young Hero. I'll be honest, the reason I picked Miami is because of the Filipino head coach. If I'm not going to rep him, who is?
That's fair.
What's his name again?
Eric Spoelstra.
Spoelstra.
Come on, man.
It's a gag. And Miami are always frisky. The last two or three seasons, they've started poorly and then bounced back at the start of the second third of the last two or three seasons to be pushing for a playoff spot. And I think this is the best team they've had since LeBron left, given that they've got an out-and-out superstar again that isn't past it. In that, of course, is Jimmy Butler, and the all-star that was past it was Dwayne Wade, who is now retired. This team should make a playoff run, and I've even got them penciled in as a potential fourth seed, so they could be playing someone. Yeah, I think the East is interesting this year. It's going to be pretty frisky.
Who did you have in your starting lineup again, sorry?
Dragic.
Are they going to play Dragic at the one or the two? Because I thought they were putting Justice Winslow out of the point.
Yeah, they.
Or is he coming off the bench?
Although I am Filipino, I am not the head coach. So these
there are a lot of options.
I like Miami. I like watching Jimmy Butler. Look, I don't delve too far into characters off the court unless they're slapping you in the face with some problematic stuff they've done. So I just like the way Jimmy Butler plays.
What Jimmy do you reckon we're going to get this year? Are we going to get Minnesota Jimmy? Are we going to get Philly Jimmy?
We all like Philly Jimmy, right, Jimmy, as a basketball player. Something's always happening with Jimmy Butler. He's either going to impress you or he's going to shit you because he didn't live up to what we've seen him provide in the past, those big shots at Philly. Clearly the best player throughout the playoffs for Philly last year. Mm. We all went into the playoffs, if you think back to it, thinking, oh, Tobias Harris is the glue guy that they should circle and retain. That ended up happening. But in the playoffs last year, we were like, maybe they should look at Kip and Jimmy Butler. That was the chat we're having. So we've cooled off the last 3 or 4 months. It's easy to forget that who was in top form at the end of last season. But if Jimmy Butler can continue on what he did at Philly, I think Miami could have a home playoff game, a series, come the middle of 2020.
Wow.
Continuing with the theme of brilliant segues, you were just talking about Jimmy Butler. You left Philadelphia.
Oh,
Philadelphia.
Man. Oh, you snuck that one in there as well. I didn't know where we were going.
Harrison,
what a roller coaster.
And he paused.
Wow.
And he paused.
Speak to us about the 76ers.
Damn.
This just proves that I like fun. I picked a good team too.
I think Goth protest a little too much.
Okay, the reason I chose the 76ers is because they are huge.
Yeah.
Josh Richardson has a 6'10 wingspan. That's their shooting
guard. That's all you need to know.
Their point guard is 7 foot. And then they have two of the most reliable rim protectors in the game behind them.
Could this be the largest team in NBA history?
I'd say.
Largest starting five.
It would have to be.
You would think. Like, how else could it ever stack up to anyone else?
The thing that I really liked about when they brought in Al Horford, I liked it for two reasons, is in the Toronto series in the playoffs, you saw in the first two games, Toronto used Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka to just pull Joel Embiid away from the rim. You can't do that when you have two big guys. All right, you can lose one, but then you've still got a really good rim protector behind you. On the flip, Philadelphia then moved him onto Pascal Siakam, and then Al Horford can play on the center, and you lose nothing. So I really love that move. Secondly, Al Horford is already noted as one of the best team leaders in the NBA. Joel Embiid is super outspoken, but I don't think anyone's really seen that amazing team leadership from him yet. And I think there's been a lot of knocks on Ben Simmons for his lack of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I think the spotlight is no longer on Simmons now. You've got Horford, and he can kind of continue to grow as a young guy because you've got Embiid and Horford talking behind him. And I don't think it's so essential for him to be that second leader, that second voice in the changing
rooms. He can just act his age.
Exactly.
He can be a third-year player. Mm. Al Horford's 33, 34.
Yeah. Mm.
Do we think that's the main reason he was brought in? It's not because of his productivity. It's because of the effect he can have on the character of LeBron Embiid and Simmons.
I think that's just as important as anything. But I think what he's going to bring on the court is also like a game changer for the 76ers. I feel like as soon as he arrived, people, and they re-signed Tobias Harris, obviously, people were like, all right, Philly are the favorites.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Their roster is now stupid good.
All of them can stretch the floor.
And Al Horford is proven in the playoffs. He's a clutch player. Like the amount of big shots he hit for Boston over the past couple of years.
He's a two-minute option in the last 2 minutes. 100%. Where last year it was just like, feed Embiid unless we need a three-point buzzer beater, we'll kick it out of Jimmy.
Yeah. And the nice part about Horford as a leader is he's not, like, as much as Jimmy, I think, did spur them on a little bit throughout the postseason with that, like, passion and the emotion and all that sort of stuff, I do think over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, that starts to wear off. It starts to get tired. Sometimes you can rub people the wrong way. Horford is a leader in the sense that he's going to say the right things at the right time. He's going to lead by example. He's not this huge personality that's going to try to take over a locker room, which I think Butler is.
I mean, played with Josh Smith for 6 years. Mm. Josh Smith, if he can manage Josh Smith, Joe Johnson, and that Atlanta team, mate, he can handle this Philly team for sure.
And it helps to be mature and massive.
Yeah.
Because JJ Redick was mature and he'd be a positive influence. But you think about it, it's hard for someone that's 6'1 to tell someone that's 7 foot to pull their head in. Just on a human level, right? But Al Horford, an old gristled veteran, when he talks, you listen. So I think it's going to have an awesome effect on those young players. And they're all signed for the same amount of time, I think, all 4 and all 5 years.
Mm.
You spoke about Horford and Embiid on defense. Plus their point guard, there are some centers and power forwards that Simmons can't mark, but he can, against a lot of teams, he can mark 1 through 5.
Yeah.
As well.
He can at very least hold his own.
Yeah,
exactly. And more so than any other point guard in the freaking league. Yeah.
Oh, and LeBron's now a point guard, apparently.
Spare me. And you look at the switches possible. My God, the magnifying glass that's going to be on Brett Brown this year is going to be so intense because a defensive lineup with Matisse Thybulle, Josh Richardson, Ben Simmons, Embiid, and Al Horford. Simmons can mark any three fairly comfortably. He did a pretty good job on Kawhi Leonard for the most part. Josh Richardson, with a 6'10 wingspan, being as athletic as he is, can mark the point. And Matisse Thybulle doesn't even need to leave his position, and he was already the best college defender by a country mile.
And Tobias Harris is as good a defender as he is an offensive player. Mm. So
yeah.
It's crazy.
Who do you guard in a screen and roll between that starting five? Anyone. Any screen and roll option on the court.
The answer is their bench. You wait till they come on.
It's interesting because if a guy like Josh Richardson, if Al Horford, if Joel Embiid all have like at least average or above average 3-point shooting years, this is going to be like I reckon they'd probably finish with the best record in the NBA. Yeah. If Josh Richardson is not an offensive liability, which is really a team's only chance if you're defending those other four, because Simmons is going to be hard to stop, Harris is hard to stop, Embiid is hard to stop, Horford is hard to stop in an offense, I don't know what you really do against them. And that leads me to my question. If there is a weakness in the Sixers team, roster, whatever, what is it?
I don't even know, because they're pretty deep as well. Like their bench isn't even that bad. They've got really good role players. But I was going to say somewhere around the Ben Simmons shooting.
He's Al a three-point Al Horford
stretches
right
the
now.
Floor
He's
now.
He's draining
so.
Threes
now. I'd say there could be a case of waiting for someone else to create the action. Like there's so many stars that like you just end up passing the ball around a bit too much. Almost like the USA and the Olympic team. Like, yeah, you've got supreme talent. No one knows whose turn it is at any one time. I imagine that being a problem at the first quarter of the season. They'll work it out, though.
Josh Richardson is essentially just a really, really fantastic role player.
Yep.
Al Horford has made a career from being a fantastic do-it-all role player. And Tobias Harris has had the same story.
Yeah.
So it's just like they're just going to keep on feeding guys that understand a role and play their role to perfection.
I think it just comes down to their weakness would be, like you said, it's Brett Brown underneath the magnifying glass. Mm. Like if he can't manage this team into the best team in the league, like surely he's the fault in our stars.
Oh, cute. Can I make one more?
I hate that I knew that was a reference.
Walk that straight into it.
I'm going to just piggyback on what Gardy said before about this team not really
I'd
having
love to
too
see
many
Gardy
weaknesses.
Piggyback you, by the way. That would be hilarious.
That'd be hilarious.
We can do it.
Okay, so last season, Giannis got the MVP. Pretty much built off the storyline of the net rating of the Milwaukee Bucks was historic, to the point where it was almost one of the best ever. This team, with the stinginess of their defense and their offensive potential, could have a higher net rating. And if this team finishes atop the East, I think the MVP comes from the
Who's
Philadelphia
Who's the MVP
76ers.
On the team then?
Joel.
Joel or Ben?
Who else? No, it can't be.
Mm.
Guess whoever has the better season.
Yeah. Always like, who do you think is going to do it?
Joel.
Mm.
I don't know. If Joel gets the Defensive Player of the Year, maybe they give Ben the MVP.
Talking about teams and players that could win MVP, a team on my list, the Golden State Warriors. I'm not going to try and make the argument that they are going to win an NBA title. Even though I'd like to. or even that they're going to contend. All I want to say is that they're going to be a whole lot of fun. Steph Curry is going to be MVP caliber Steph Curry, the fun Steph Curry that we know and love and miss, and we missed over the last 2 years or 3 years with KD. If they can figure out a way to make D'Angelo Russell and Klay Thompson work when Klay comes back, at very least, this Warriors team is going to be one of the best offenses in the NBA. I don't know about the defense. I don't know if it works. And I know Harrison has some strong opinions on that.
You can't hide D'Angelo and Curry.
It's hard. Yeah. It's going to be hard. But I do think they're going to be one of the most enjoyable teams to watch. And I think Steph Curry is going to average like a stupid amount of points.
Yeah. 30 plus or 30?
I'm thinking like 35 plus.
On how 30? Ooh.
On how many shots a game?
All of them.
Yeah, give them all 45 shots a game.
All I want right now is for the Warriors to throw out what they've been doing the past couple of years and say high pick and roll with Steph. And high pick and roll with D'Angelo and just play a high pick and roll offense. Because that's what Warriors fans have been calling out for years. They're like, just put the ball in Steph's hands and let him run a high pick and roll and see what he can do.
Well, because you have to bite on it as well. You're right. You can't not run straight through that pick and close him out on the 3-point line. And they'll leave the guy in the middle, the roller wide open.
At this point, you just got to let Steph do his thing, I reckon.
if Draymond is the same player that was in last year's playoffs, Warriors could go all the way. Because, like, oh, they've lost KD. You know who they are. The team that were in the two finals, the two seasons before KD came. Mm. Is it likely? No. But is it a possibility? For sure, dude. Because Draymond was unbelievable in last year's playoffs. Looked like a completely different player in comparison to the regular season. I think it won't only free up Steph, it'll free up Clay as well. There'll be all of KD's shots can be shared around against these absolute guns.
I think they're going to be playing like underdogs this year. I think they're going to quite enjoy the fact that people are writing them off, that they aren't the favorites going in. Draymond's going to be playing like a dog, as you said. Steph's going to be ready to make another MVP case. I know what Harrison's going to say, and I do agree that when the going gets tough in the playoffs against the best teams in the West that have elite front court talent, they're going to struggle, and on the wings as well. I'll let you make that case because I know you want.
No. I don't actually think it needs to be said that much. I think losing Durant and Iggy defensively is such a painful loss. And then Clay having to mark the best perimeter player, and then Draymond, like against the Clippers, also having to mark a Paul George type of player, I think is going to hurt them a lot. And I think the same thing with Westbrook and Harden. I think that's just going to be a nightmare for D'Angelo Russell to have to even try and cover one of them. I don't actually think it's going to be that much of a problem. But question for you, Guardy, if Steph guides Golden State to a top four finish in the West,
mm-hmm.
And wins the MVP, where does he move on the list of all-time players? Because that is one of the most insane achievements if he can do that.
Well, where do you have him now?
I guess
that's the question.
He'd be the third best point guard all-time to me.
I've got him in top 30 all-time already.
Mm.
Yeah, 20.
See, I'd probably have him like top 20 all-time.
Yeah.
But that's just, I'm a Steph fanboy. Yeah. If he were to do that, I think he'd be in the chat for best point guard of all time. I think he'd have to be.
Yeah. Look, Magic is number one for me. And then John Stockton
gets forgotten about.
Gary Payton says that John Stockton was harder to mark than Michael Jordan because of all the different ways John Stockton could hurt you. Michael Jordan was just going to burn you. But he was like, John Stockton used to play with your head through his eyes. Like,
I just don't know how you'd be able to argue against like Curry when you look at his resume. If he does what you say, if he leads them and he gets another MVP, that's three MVPs, three titles, back-to-back MVPs at one point, most three-pointers in NBA history by a bloody country mile.
How many assists, though, as a point guard?
It's,
that's the thing.
Yeah,
that's his position, point guard. I know that's the position is different thing, from when Stockton played.
Yeah.
But it's not that Stockton is ahead in assists and steals, it's how far ahead he is in those categories.
I guess you're just asking like what their roles are, though.
And also,
Steph's role isn't to play playmaker.
And what do you prefer out of a point guard when you watch it? I like that old.
There's a whole other conversation, whole other kettle of fish.
But
really.
But yeah, he's knocking on that door. Already,
I feel surely. Like he creeps into top 10.
Yeah,
all time with an MVP.
If he wins another MVP, it's hard to. If he puts a
whole title on his back and wins it.
Oh my god.
Different. We'll have to come up with a new category of conversation.
I'd have to do just a 2-hour special podcast, just me alone in this podcast room, just talking.
That was going somewhere else.
Yeah. No, I'll keep it appropriate.
Well, I think actually, like going back to like the Warriors' chances to win it all, like, do you really think that their depth can carry them to a championship, or is it just their four best players that really would carry this team?
I don't think anyone's saying that Steph can. No. I think we're saying can Steph.
Yeah, no, but like surely he can't do this on his own.
Does their depth allow them to win a premiership?
I don't think it does.
We haven't heard from us in years, guys. We've been doing other sports. I'm sorry.
Steph is one of the few players in the NBA that I think every coach needs a specific game plan for. I think there's like him, Anthony Davis, and James Harden at the moment where I think and Giannis, where everything we do needs to be about stopping Steph. And I think whenever you have one of those players, I think you have to be in the conversation.
Yeah, fair enough. But if they just can't keep up defensively.
Yeah, one
if you're giving up with more points than you're scoring,
Yeah, you lose.
Yeah, you lose.
Wait, let me write that down.
Can I just check the rules?
I just did the math.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I just don't think they have any kind of stability defensively.
Guardy actually wrote 1+1.
Over under, how many games do you think they win?
53.
Yeah, I'm saying like in the low 50s.
I'll go 55.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 50. Yeah, I'm going to say 57, around that 57 mark.
Quite high
50s,
yeah. 50s, yeah.
All right, moving on from the Warriors, who obviously had a bit of off-season transition with D'Angelo Russell coming in, Kevin Durant going out. The place Kevin Durant ended up, where he chose to go, the big off-season narrative, he's now at the Brooklyn Nets. Tom, that team is on your list.
They are indeed. And I think it's no secret to anyone that depth in the NBA leads to success in championships. And I think that Brooklyn, sitting behind the Clippers, are the second deepest team in the NBA, filled with a lot of length and a lot of role players. And, I mean, they have the best backup point guard, or arguably the best backup point guard in the NBA. You could probably toss him aside with Lou Williams on that regard. But
say his name.
Name?
Lou Williams. No, oh, Spencer Dinwiddie. Yeah, Spencer Dinwiddie. Yeah, that's a good point.
I agree.
Yeah, I concur.
Now that Jeremy Lin isn't in the league.
Now that Jeremy Lin's gone, yeah. But it's depth that they're definitely going to need, because clearly, obviously, Kevin Durant's not back till most likely the playoffs. And as I heard today, that Kyrie Irving re-aggravated his facial injury. Most people are interested to see if what happened with him in Boston was just a finite thing within Boston, or he's going to take that with him now to Brooklyn, and how it's going to really sort out. I think it's going to be interesting.
I think Kyrie Irving is still potentially a douchebag, but I think it's such a different scenario in comparison to Boston. In Boston, you're dealing with the history and lore of the Celtics. Like, you have a reputation to uphold once you play for Boston. That narrative does not exist with the Brooklyn Nets. They're trailblazers, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. They're creating new history and lore for not a new franchise, but a franchise that hasn't been in the sun in terms of success, in terms of even being the coolest, best, whatever way you want to put it, the best team in their province, because it's been the Knicks. But what Kyrie and KD have been pointing out since they've came is that over the last 40 years, Brooklyn and the Knicks have the same amount of championships.
Mm.
So why can't Brooklyn be the top dogs? And I think Kyrie was an irritant at Brooklyn. I think it could be perceived as just like swagger of the new kids on the block when he's at Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a new take on Kyrie's attitude as opposed to Kyrie changing his attitude.
I really hope you're right, because after his first season, which was so good, everyone was talking about Brad Stevens being the next Popovich. And what we learned in one 82-game swoop is that maybe he can't manage a superstar. So now Kenny Atkinson, who had so much success last year with that zone, that blue-collar team that he had last year, is now he's bringing in that guy who is so disruptive that he ruined Brad Stevens and the image of Brad Stevens. And I don't know, is he going to do the same thing to Kenny Atkinson?
Well, Kenny Atkinson has been seen to be the point guard whisperer over the last time in the league. Like, he brought Jeff Teague to, I think, an all-star game? When he was in Atlanta?
Yeah.
And he did what he did with D'Angelo over last year. So it'll be interesting to see if he has not only the way to build him on the court, but it becomes in the personality into it as well, to see if he can manage it from there. And it'd be really interesting to see how it kind of works out.
If he can get through to Kyrie.
Yeah, exactly. If you can get through to Kyrie, you can get through to anyone.
I think the most underrated piece from that team is going to be Caris LeVert this year. I think what we've seen in preseason already, and I think what we saw in the playoffs last year, Caris LeVert was amazing, and he took the role from Spencer Dinwiddie as that playmaker in the second unit. He's going to do that all year.
Mm. I'm putting a cheeky red back on Brooklyn to make the Eastern Conference Finals this year.
Wow.
Oh, most definitely.
Because if KD comes back in the playoffs, it's like, oh, what? The best player in the playoffs plays for the Nets. That's handy.
Yeah.
That is handy.
And you've got the second or third best point guard, fourth best point guard in the league with
him. Well, it's interesting you put him in that sort of category, because my final question on the Nets is, how important is this season for Kyrie Irving's career as a whole, and how we view him as a star in the league? or as an elite player in the league? Because I think in Cleveland, we were like, yep, this guy's one of the best point guards in the league, one of the most clutch players in the league. And then we were kind of like, but could he do it as 1A superstar? Went to Boston, as you said, absolute shit show. This is now another opportunity. If this Brooklyn team doesn't work as well as it did even last season, where does Kyrie sit now?
I think in
the grand scheme of
things? He sits as one of the best highlight reel players in the NBA. So like watching his highlights is exceptional. His handle, his finishing at the rim. But then you watch him as over an entire season with an entire team. Like he's never played 82 games, never played a full season in his entire career. I think he's maybe played more than 60 in a career.
I reckon Kyrie Irving's got 30 games to avoid the John Wall virus. Mm. About being that guy who, yeah, okay, he's a great player, but he's never going to lead a team and you shouldn't have paid him. It's a mistake. No one wants him.
Yeesh.
Yeah, I reckon that's what's at stake for Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, it's going to be it's a decisive year for old Kyrie. And he's got the team to help him along the way.
Talking about a guy that also doesn't like the Knicks, Kristaps Porzingis is in Dallas.
Mm.
That's
that one's on your list.
That's
I'm up. I love this team.
Tell us why.
I really like where Dallas are sitting at the moment. But that's because at the moment, Porzingis is classified as healthy. It's gonna be nerve wracking's a bit strong, but like everyone's gonna be tense watching Dallas for the first half of this season, just hoping that Porzingis can play 80% of the games. Given the success that Toronto had, not only with Kawhi with load management, but the rest of their superstars like Kyle Lowry, who else had some time off. I think maybe Siakam towards the end of the year. Given that load management is now in vogue, I'd be surprised if Dallas, even if he was fit all year, started in more than 65 games. So that'll be interesting to see.
Is that something you can do in the Western Conference to kind of keep at the pace when you're on the fringe? Like are they looking towards playoffs this year?
When you're talking about $100 million-plus dollar players, you can't just be thinking about this year. You need to be thinking about the next four fiscal seasons. he's an investment. He is an asset. My starters for this would be Wright, Doncic, Tim Hardaway Jr. There's a fan of him somewhere on this pod. Mm. Is it you?
Yeah.
Tom?
I'm a fan. Yeah. Gross.
Sorry, shouldn't use pronouns. On the unicorn. And then Dwight Powell, will he start at center?
You'll either I don't know if you'll start.
Which way they want to go. If they want to go big or small off the bat and have Porzingis at the four.
I think you want Porzingis at the four so you can keep spreading it. And like a Dwight Powell pick and roll.
Yeah, he is.
He's a very effective, very athletic player. Absolutely. Has been the past couple of years.
Potential problem with this team, Porzingis and Hardaway, percentage-wise over their career, are their best three-point shooters and neither of them are strong. Right, 29%. Doncic, 32 last year. That could go up to 36, 37. For sure. But these other ones have had enough time. Like their percentage now is a good representation of them. Hardaway, 34. The Unicorn, 33. And Dwight Powell isn't quite a stretch five, but he can shoot it at 30%.
Mm.
It's 2019, 2020. Best have some three-point shooters or you're going to lose by not scoring as many points per basket.
Is there a better screen and roll in the NBA than Luka and Kristaps?
Or LeBron and AD probably.
Lou Will and Montrez.
They are very good pick and roll.
Very effective.
Mm.
But yeah, it will be one of the best.
And if Scotty gets his way, Steph Curry and anybody else.
JJ Barea actually also lost his 6-foot tag. He's now 5'10". It's insane to me that he's 5'10". He still looks so much smaller than 5'10".
Oh, yeah.
He does.
He looks like a 5'4" person. Just in the scale measurements. I don't know. Okay, so those are the teams that we just wanted to talk about. Due to time... What Harrison?
Hold
you
on.
Look like you've just seen an alien.
You're going to cut the Pelicans?
Yeah, we won.
Oh, yeah, shit. All right.
No, we're just teasing them. We're professionals. This is a podcast. We're professionals.
We're definitely professionals.
We'll tease them. We'll definitely tease them.
That was just part of a segue. Just a grand segue. The ultimate closing
for the
segue.
Grandest young talent in the league has ever seen.
Yeah, Lonzo Ball. Zion Williamson is in New Orleans and he's doing things in preseason that are getting my juices flowing. He's like, I'm not going to say this guy's going to be a success, but I'm saying this guy's going to be a success. Like there were concerns about him going number one, like huge bust potential people were talking about. I know that's the way we felt, but people say things, but we've seen yes, I know it's preseason and it's preseason defenses and preseason matchups, but his athleticism translates to the NBA and beyond, maybe to outer space. He could play against the Monstars and stuff. He'd suit just fine.
That's huge shoes.
And yeah, there's a lot of like young players. There's obviously the Lakers bunch that we get to see. We get to see a new jump shot from Lonzo Ball. Still not pretty, but maybe a little bit prettier.
Yeah. It's getting there.
Maybe a little
hasn't
bit.
Got that swoop to it. It's more coming up from there.
His legs are a bit wider now, like a bit more.
A little too wide, if I do say so myself, though. Yeah.
Well, you did.
Yeah, that happened.
I like that there's going to be more spotlight on Drew Holiday because I think he's one of the best players in the NBA. Doesn't get enough love. And weirdly enough, and like they've had Anthony Davis, a genuine superstar in the league for how many years, but I still don't feel like they've had the amount of attention with AD that they've had in like just a couple months with Zion.
It's a fair point. Before, about this time last year, I read somewhere that they were the worst or second worst in terms of viewership in the NBA, and their crowds are notoriously terrible. But yeah,
they sold out their last preseason game.
That's backing up my next point.
Exactly.
AD, they might retire, and AD might be seen as a better all-round basketball player. But he doesn't have the pop that Zion does on the screen. He's just got some charisma about him, and he doesn't make sense physically. he's 13 kilos heavier than Nikola Jokic.
And he's 6'6".
and he moves like he's 6'1".
Kilos?
Yeah, human kilos. He's 13 kilos heavier than Nikola Jokic.
Wow. Who could afford to lose like...
Yeah.
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 But this is what I mean. Okay, do that equation. It does not make sense. He pops off the screen for all of those
reasons.
Doesn't
make sense. I did it.
1 + 1 = 13 kilos?
What?
He's just got something about him. And I think that's why... Obviously, a phenom. He's going to get compared to LeBron, but that appeal that LeBron had, LeBron's got that charisma that really comes through. And we're not just talking about basketball fans; we're talking about fans of superstars, and that's what Zion is going to be. And AD may never be that, even though he's in LA.
I think we're going to see two rookies from this team be on the first all rookie team, and that's Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He is awesome. I was watching him and I was watching Lonzo, and I'm very, very biased against Lonzo. Everyone here knows that. But I truly believe their best lineup will be NAW, Drew Holiday, JJ Redick, just giving all the space for Zion.
That is juicy. That's like, good.
Nickeil Alexander-Walker in their last preseason game went 5 from 5 from three. Yeah, all of them were good shots.
He was in my notes as a player that stood out to me in preseason as well. I just think like at the very least, this Pelicans team is going to be an intriguing team to follow throughout the season. Aside from the Zion stuff, because there's so many narratives in there as well. Like, what is Lonzo? Do we finally get to figure that out? Is he just going to be an average player in the NBA? If so, like, that was a number two pick, you know, like, only a couple years ago. I think the encouraging part with Zion is, like, sure, there's going to be defensive schemes that might expose his game a little bit more than we've seen in preseason. But inside, in the paint, he looks like a vet. Like, the amount of moves and composure he's shown around the rim, for me, is super impressive.
How's being the strongest in whatever vicinity you're in?
Yeah. He's a 19-year-old. I know. Like, it just doesn't is ridiculous. It doesn't make sense.
You talk about the eye test and why it doesn't make sense is you put a center on him, he's too fast. You put anyone else on him, he's too strong. What do you do? It doesn't make sense. And you watch it, and I was talking to Olgan about it earlier this week, and I was just like, I don't know if this is real. And we both came to the conclusion that it was, but it is.
What player in the NBA is the most well-equipped to mark someone like Zion?
LeBron?
Giannis, probably.
LeBron's passed it, and he doesn't play defense anymore.
JJ Barea on Seth Curry's shoulders.
Yeah.
That's just about the right height.
He's still about
with a giant
50
jacket on.
Kilos too light.
I guess Draymond, right?
Yeah.
The scary thing is that 19-year-olds have been known to grow a couple of inches.
Yeah.
He could use a couple of inches.
Yeah. That's.
I mean, if he wants to be
then
more...
Couldn't we all, Gutty? Couldn't we all?
Yeah.
All right, so we'll cut it there because we are going extremely long. As I was saying earlier, we did want to discuss a couple like of the obvious contenders, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Bucks. You can maybe throw in the Nuggets and the Jazz, but we might have to touch on them maybe a little bit next episode because we don't want to bore you guys to death. The plan for next week, we are going to give you some of our hottest, our coldest takes, some of our predictions. Obviously, we can go through the contenders when we talk about that. But that is the first podcast of the 2019-20 NBA season. If you made it this far, we thank you. We ask you to leave us a review and a rating on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this. And please come back next week because there will be a podcast next week and going forward every week. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.